Today is August 13th, 2014. This is episode number 267 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
That was like the most boring title you've ever come up with.
It's like a real one.
I know it's like a real one.
I did that once before when I was doing the intro with because Dave was standing in for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that is the first time I've used a real title.
I'm glad I was sitting down
with the two of us on the show.
Yeah, that was just weird.
Yeah, kind of strange, surreal.
Yeah,
I feel a little sick.
Yeah, let's hug.
All right. Well, instead of hugging.
I told you have to buy me drinks first.
No, not that. I don't want to give the interns the wrong idea. So instead of hugging, let's talk about HealthKit.
Good save.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. HealthKit.
Right. Okay. So if you're not up to speed, HealthKit is a feature in iOS 8. And it's what it does is it lets other companies tie into a common platform for recording and then potentially sharing health and fitness data about you.
Ooh, I got a quibble.
Quibble away.
Because the platform is not about enabling companies to collect data about you. The platform, the HealthKit platform, is about allowing you to collect and control health information about yourself that you can then share with the health industry if you so choose. There's a huge difference.
There's a huge difference, and you're right. And the wording that I chose did not convey that very well, even though that's exactly what I meant.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, because the you know, it's Google would conceivably launch a platform designed to collect information about your health, but help, you know, that, and Facebook might do that. I could see Microsoft doing that, but Apple was very clear about the fact that HealthKit was a centralized way in iOS for you to not only monitor various health-related data points about yourself, but to be able to control that information, to have a centralized point of control so that you know where it's going.
And I like the idea of being in control of that information.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I do. I very much do. And yeah, I think it was on the Apple Context Machine where I said that I'm hoping that Apple and iWatch plus HealthKit is going to spark in me the interest to think differently about my own health and fitness.
Yes, actually, it is on ACM where you said that. I do remember. Yeah,
and that still holds very, very true. I can't wait to see what Apple's going to do with the iWatch. But we're already starting to see some of what can be done with HealthKit. And the story that you wrote this week, by the way, that was like a real segue. I'm spoiling it right now, but that was a real. That was a real segue.
Who are you, and what have you done with Brian?
I don't know. It's so weird. So the story that you wrote this week was about Apple reaching out to really some of the big time clinics in at least in the U.S. Some of the big time scientific research oriented hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And working with them to embrace HealthKit before iOS 8 and, you know, unstated, the iWatch is released.
Right. And
so tell us about that.
Well, first, I think it's really exciting because what a great way to empower the patient with the information because that they control it. So the deal is Apple has been talking with major health centers and major clinics to try and figure out how to get them to integrate HealthKit into their record management systems. And there are a lot of companies, it sounds like, that are really interested in this because it gives them a way to get information from clients without having to really do a lot of or put a lot of extra overhead in place, like having the patients come in and they fit them up with all this extra gear. And then it also is a potential money saver for these organizations because instead of having to support just scads of different systems that are not compatible in any way, all they need to do is support the one system, HealthKit, and now they have a common platform, and all of these other devices that are being produced or updated to include HealthKit support will just kind of tie into that as well. The idea is that ultimately Apple becomes the de facto standard for health and fitness tracking, monitoring, and then data sharing with the medical centers and doctors that you specify.
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot about Apple's disruptions. And I have said numerous times that HealthKit is, or I'm sorry, that the iWatch in particular is not a smart watch disrupting product, but that it's a health industry disrupting product. And this is an excellent this is a data point supporting that belief. I think that Apple is in a position here. If they can do this, if they can actually do what it is that they've already laid out, let alone what we're sort of reading into it, right?
Right.
If they can actually do this and do it well, this could be a real game changer for a lot of people on the health and fitness front.
Yes. Yeah. This is, as you said, market disrupting. And I think it will be. Well, I think it has the potential to be. And when I look at the arguments that Apple can present to health centers, like you're getting accurate data because you know the sensors that are being used to collect this information, and it's not having to be passed off to someone else for translation. And then you're also able to create a two-way dialogue, in a manner of speaking, with your patients, because the patients are sending data, and then if you so choose, you can allow your doctors and medical centers to push information back to you through HealthKit.
Is that for sure? Is that in HealthKit that we know of?
That's one of the things that Apple talked about in the WWDC keynote.
Was pushing information back to us from the medical industry.
Right. So as an example, you have a some sort of heart monitor device that is feeding information back to your iPhone and then sending that information back onto your doctors. And then if they see issues, then they can push a message back saying, hey, you need to schedule an appointment because we're seeing irregularities.
Now, that's cool stuff, man.
That's really cool stuff. Now, I'm sure you noticed how I said, I'm certain this is going to be the standard. And then I backtracked immediately. And the back...
Maybe.
And, okay, well, great. No one noticed. So, great. Perfect. Anyhow, the reason I did that was because I started thinking about the fact that we have Samsung and Google both wanting to get in on this game as well.
And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about that on the show. It's the because you're right. Google and Samsung want to get on this. I'm sure there are other companies that want to get on this. Microsoft might be one of them. a myriad of other, probably a myriad of other players within the existing health industry probably want to get in on this, or, you know, have part of this pie. But our area of expertise is definitely going to be that Apple, Google, Samsung Nexus. And let's talk about that.
All right. Well, the problem that I see here is that it isn't even a two-sided fight. It's a three-sided fight, because it's not Samsung wanting to have control over this market with Google. They want to have control over this market instead of Google.
Yes.
So that means we have Apple working independently, Google working independently, Samsung working independently. How do these medical centers decide which platform to standardize on?
Right.
And then for a patient, do you now have to start choosing which doctors you use based on whether or not they support HealthKit or whatever Samsung releases or Google releases?
Right. This is definitely one of those areas where multiple competing platforms probably isn't going to fly. But at the same time, not everyone on the planet can use an iPhone.
That's a really good point.
Right. We don't want a world where Apple is the only smartphone maker.
So then that raises a question. If HealthKit becomes a standard and doctors really want to be able to remotely collect information with patient's consent, then how do you make this happen in a way that allows HealthKit to still be a standard?
Right. The only way for it to be a quote unquote standard would be for Apple to open it up to other platforms. And that cannot happen, not only from a business perspective, but from a technology perspective, because part of what Apple is offering is the ability part of what Apple is bringing to the table is the ability for you to have absolute control over your data and to know where it's going, who's using it, and what's being done with it. And that is something that only Apple can offer at this point, because Apple is the only company that controls the whole widget.
Right. So how do we work around that problem? Because you're right, not everyone's going to have an iPhone. Of course, I'm sure the ultimate solution for Apple is, well, just buy an iPhone. But there needs to be a way to work around that. So does that mean Apple needs to release other hardware that people can use to offload data from these sensors and then somehow into HealthKit?
Like an iWatch app on Windows? Or an iWatch app on Android. I mean, you know, the reality is that Apple is probably not. Apple is probably. I got to take us on a tangent, a complete tangent. It's related, but it's a tangent.
Okay.
And I saw this because I was reading something. Yesterday about security, company. I forget what they're called. They're a security company that makes surveillance software that is largely sold to governments, like SpyFin or FinSpy or something like that. I forget what it's called, but some documents leaked that said that this company had problems with iOS devices.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they don't have problems with anything else, but they've got problems with iOS devices, and which is, you know, hooray for us. Unless, of course, your iPhone is jailbroken. If your iPhone has been jailbroken, you have essentially stripped out the security layers that make it hard to do this third-party surveillance that this company peddles to governments. And one of the angles in this article that I was reading is that there's kind of a security gap, because iOS devices are largely in the hands of the more affluent. not always, but that certainly Apple's demographic skews towards the affluent.
Okay.
And so the affluent effectively have access to more security than the unaffluent, because Android devices are, you know, like these people, you know, Android is probably their bread and butter at this point. And anyway, so this relates to this, because are we looking at a situation where if HealthKit becomes a major thing, is this something where Apple is the affluent have access to it and the unaffluent don't?
Oh, that's a really good question, because at that point, then Apple could unintentionally, I'm assuming, be playing into helping solidify the caste system of those who have medical care in this country and those who do not.
Yep.
That's not a game I think Apple wants to play.
Yeah, and maybe it's possible. It is always possible. Let me stress this with our listeners. Let me stress this to as strongly as I can. It is very possible, maybe even probable, that we're reading too much into HealthKit, that we're wanting HealthKit and iWatch to be, at least certainly for me, maybe I shouldn't speak for Jeff, but that I'm wanting HealthKit and iWatch to be more than Apple is planning or could even hope to do.
I don't think that you're being unreasonable, because there are several points throughout Apple's history where they have done things that became more or other than what they had intended. And I mean, well, if, or maybe not, maybe I'm just making that bold assumption, because I look at how different products evolved. Like I'll use iMovie as an example, even though it's probably not the best example. Apple intended it to be a tool for the casual home user that wanted to whip together a fun little family video. And it evolved into something outside of Apple's control, where it became a tool that professionals were using as well. And people found uses for iMovie that went far beyond what Apple intended. Ultimately, they killed the product and then released a new product with the same name to bring it back in to where they expected it to be. But sure, HealthKit could become far more than what Apple is envisioning today. And I could see that happening because of the vision that people like you have, where they know what they want out of this. And then they find a way to make that happen. And then it grows beyond what Apple had originally thought it could be.
Right. 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 And we definitely don't have answers for that today. But what we do know is that, Apple is trying to bring these research clinics and hospitals on board ahead of time. And you know, that's just a super cool thing. I can't wait to see what Apple brings to the table with all this stuff, and its effect on not only the healthcare industry but also in the platform wars could be significant.
I'm expecting it will be significant, and I'm expecting that Apple's going to come out guns a-blazing, so to speak, and that they are really, really serious about disrupting this market.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that. Do you remember me saying that Tim Cook wanted to move the needle, the revenue needle, and that was one reason why Apple could release a physical TV unit?
Actually, now that you say that, I do remember. Yes.
Yeah. First of all, I was probably wrong. And at least about Apple releasing a significant TV unit. But I do think that I do think that Tim is mindful of bringing something to the table as CEO of Apple. And I believe that HealthKit, to a lesser extent, HomeKit, and the iWatch are going to be the devices that is going to be the services that mark Tim's tenure at Apple. And I think that they are putting an enormous amount of effort into this, an enormous amount of effort. And that they are doing so suggests that they believe that the return will be significant, that lots of people are going to embrace what they're doing.
I agree with you completely. And just look at the hirings that Apple has done over the past couple of years. And I'm talking more than just the people they've hired away from Nike that have all that experience in fitness tracking, device development, and the doctors and the other sensor makers, all that stuff. I'm also talking about like when they hired the expert in dealing with FDA approval.
Yeah, and you know, just the I always think about what it would have taken to pull the sleep expert away from Philips. You know, I mean, I cannot imagine that I don't know that guy personally, never met him. I did some research on him at the time that the report came that he had been hired away by Apple. I would be shocked if money was the only thing that lured him to Apple.
I would be shocked as well. My guess is that for many of these people that Apple has hired, when they sat down with them and said, "So, you know, we want to talk to you about coming to work for us," and yeah, here's all these zeros that are going to be on your check, but look at this, and the people are like, "Oh," and that was the real siren song, not the big paychecks. I think you totally nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, man. I can't wait. This is gonna be a good fall. This is gonna be a good fall.
It's going to be an expensive fall, I fear.
It's gonna be an expensive fall too. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on, eh?
All right, let's move on.
Let's move on to
good pick. Thing we both had the list right there in front of us, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pick.
I found the list. Since we're already talking about Apple specifically, how about if we keep on that theme? And
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you wrote an interesting piece a couple days ago about Apple University, which was cool, but the thing that really stuck out for me was that Apple has all of this design prowess, and they're creating all of these products that everyone else is copying, and yet no one has been able to copy Apple's design style.
Or design philosophy.
Or design philosophy, yes.
And we've had people copy Apple. I mean, clearly Samsung was able to take its share of the smartphone market from like 1% to being able to go toe-to-toe with Apple, let alone eventually surpassing Apple. Because there came a point where Samsung was no longer focused on copying Apple, where its devices didn't look like the iPhone or that didn't look like the iPad. And that process, that point in time came certainly after Apple launched a myriad of lawsuits against the company. But up until that point, Apple, we know that Samsung deliberately copied Apple's iPhone and iOS as much as they could because they realized that their own approach was not resonating with consumers. That we have court documents that
say that exactly.
yeah, that Sam, where Samsung says this is not speculation. This is not the partisanship on my part. This is Samsung saying we have to copy Apple because our products stink. But that's different. There's a difference between copying Apple's products and copying Apple's results and trying to emulate Apple's process. And you know, Apple has been showing since Steve Jobs came back, since the launch of the original iMac, Apple has given the world a blueprint for how to think differently about products.
And yet, we don't see companies doing that.
Why is that?
It has to come down to company philosophy. I mean, that's all I can figure. And then after that, you have to have the right people on staff. But if maybe what it is that we're looking at companies that are focusing on market share, where Apple is focusing on creating an experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I look at Samsung products and I don't see an experience that I enjoy. And I'm saying that having played with Samsung smartphones and tablets, they don't have the draw for me that an iPhone or an iPad has. And it's not just because of iOS or the Apple logo. It's the whole package deal.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's not just Samsung. It's every other company. You know, it's so like the story was actually about Apple University. And Apple University is the education system that's internal to Apple that is designed to teach. And I'm actually a little bit confused on this. At one point, I thought it was only for executives and for you know, like managers on up, I should say, not just like the top executive team.
And that's what I assumed as well.
The piece from the New York Times by Brian Chin, it's actually one of the best pieces from him I've read. It's a solid piece. Suggests that it's actually for just about anybody at Apple that there are classes that are designed. You know what? I can find this out. I'm going to find this out.
Okay.
I apologize for not already having found it out, everybody. So,
No, you don't need to apologize, because what you're doing is you're giving people a teaser. This is what I'm going to teach you next.
I should have already figured this one out. In any event, though, the object is to teach people the Apple way of doing things, which really comes down to the Steve Jobs way of doing things. And this is something that Steve Jobs focused on for the last few years of his life. You know, he hired a top guy from, I think the first guy was from Yale or Harvard? Harvard. It was a Harvard Business School, wasn't it?
That sounds really familiar.
Was it the
familiar.
Yale Business School? Boy, we suck at this, don't we?
Well, at least we can get by in life on our looks.
Oh, good Lord, we're in trouble. I'm in trouble. You can probably. Anyway, so he hired this top academic to help him boil down his ideas and philosophy on how to develop products. And then that was turned into a series of courses. And now this guy in the last year has gone full time towards this. He used to actually be a human resources guy as well. But now he's full time on Apple University. They've hired other professors. They have all sorts of courses that are developed. And these courses are not taught on the internet. They're taught in classrooms or taught in a 101 one. I'm sorry. In a, you know, small groups to one course instructor basis. And a lot of these people come from the world of academia. They're professors. They continue to be professors. They're just moonlighting with Apple. And this is a big part of Steve Jobs saying that he had created Apple to out, outlast him.
Yeah, clearly.
And it's one of the reasons why I have very little tolerance for people who say that Apple is dead without Steve Jobs, because again, as I've said a jillion times, if you think that Steve Jobs was the bee's knees, when Steve Jobs says that he created Apple to last, that he made sure that Apple would outlast him, you have to believe him until proven otherwise.
Sure.
And, well, you can't have your cake and eat it too there, or you can't have your anti-cake and eat it too.
Right. And still, you can consider Steve Jobs the bee's knees if you want, because he had the foresight to build a whole system that allows the company to function without him. And yes. And for a man that was, by all appearances, incredibly self-centered, that was, I think, an amazing move to make, because...
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of weaker people would have been happy to see the company die without them, just as proof of their own greatness.
Sure. And he cared so much about what he was creating that he wanted to make sure that it lived beyond him.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think that that's yet another sign of his, Steve Jobs was not perfect, but he was an amazing individual. So one of the things that came out of this story, this sort of inner look at Apple University, which, by the way, is the first major look that we've had at Apple University, and it was based on three, I think, former Apple employees that were willing to talk, as long as they weren't named. And I don't even know if they're former employees, but three people basically were willing to talk.
I'm going to guess they were former employees.
Yeah, I can't.
Can you imagine going through Apple University and doing, being important enough to go through Apple University?
Well, it depends on if it's open to anyone.
That's true.
Anyone at the corporate level, at least. I don't think it's open to retail, but again, I could be wrong. That's not the point. Let's have a pretense thing focused.
Okay, whatever. I mean, sure, Brian.
And one of the classes did this comparison, and they showed the Apple TV remote, and they compared it to a 78-button Google TV remote. And we weren't sure which one that is, but Business Insider uncovered or found a Sony remote that has a keyboard on it that is at least the strong candidate for being the supposed 78-button remote. And the idea is that, this is everybody else's way of doing business, and this is how we do things. And the lesson here is that the Google TV remote was, again, made by another party, was happened because every engineer got what they wanted. And, Apple's creation process, Apple's design process, is this ruthless thing of saying no.
True. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to end up just being redundant. So carry on.
All right. So, whittling down every product, every function of that product to its most fundamental core, and it's fundamental, just this, it's absolute bare minimum. And and I think another course compared to had people looking at Picasso's The Bull painting, and this is a series of 11 lithographs that Picasso did over several years, where he and I'm actually confused. Do you know anything about that particular work?
I don't, unfortunately.
I was not able to, in the research I was doing for writing my opinion piece, I wasn't able to find exactly what I wanted to know about this. But the way the Times put it, Picasso started with this, still abstract Picassian painting or lithograph of a bull. And then did like a series of 11 such lithographs where he eventually reduces it to its most minimal shape where you still know where it is. And it was essentially a stick figure, and it was very obviously a bull. And the reason why I say I'm confused about the process, I read one of the comments on the New York Times was laughing at the author for getting that wrong and saying that the lithographs actually were done in the other order, that it started with a line with the stick figure and then it ended up with the full painting of the bull. And so I'm not sure about that, but either way, it doesn't matter. The point is the idea of reducing any product to its bare minimum is what Apple does. And to bring us back to what we're supposed to be talking about, no one else seems to be capable of doing this.
You know, looking at that remote, I have to agree. And looking at the remotes that shipped with my DVD player, my television, all of that, I have to agree. People don't seem to get that. And so what is it that's different about Apple that allows them to get that and to continue to get that even with their visionary gone?
Well, to be fair, we don't yet have the proof that Apple can do that with their visionary, i.e. Steve Jobs, gone. Yeah, everything that Apple ships today is something that Apple was shipping when Steve was alive. It's just a new iteration. So, admittedly, we don't yet know that Apple can. We probably will know that when the iWatch comes out. But we certainly saw iOS 7 was envisioned after Steve Jobs died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was started and implemented and executed, was it more than a year? Or was it a year? Or was it actually just a few months afterwards? Because he took over, because it was after... It's after Forstall, because Forstall got fired just a couple of... No, I guess Forstall got fired roughly a year after Steve died, right?
That sounds about right, yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, and it was a couple... It was right then when Johnny Ive was put in charge of software interface. So, you know, that was started and done after Steve died, and I think that iOS 7 is gorgeous. I know that there are... still a few people out there who disagree with that, but personally I think it's absolutely gorgeous and proof that Apple can do what Apple does without Steve.
Yeah, I think iOS 7 is good looking, and I think it's a step in the right direction towards whatever the interface is going to eventually morph into.
Right.
It did take some getting used to.
But no one else seems to be able to do this. No one else seems to be capable or willing to reduce products down to their bare minimum in order to be simple and easy to use. And it's just interesting that Apple has been showing the world that this can be done and to a lesser extent how to do it. And yet no one else is.
Yeah.
It's just interesting.
It is. And now the other thing that will be interesting is the long-term Apple thing and seeing if Apple can continue with the vision that they have created and hopefully with Apple University, yes, they can. And now here's another thought. Maybe other companies will be able to start doing this as Apple employees that have completed Apple University ultimately get hired away to competitors.
Well, that's an interesting point, because most Apple executives and employees don't do that well once they leave Apple. There are a few exceptions. But you don't have Apple employees, former Apple employees don't rule the world.
That's true.
You know, like, again, we have some exceptions. I'm not saying that everybody that leaves Apple becomes a loser by any means. As a matter of fact, I think that one of the places where former Apple employees have been the most successful is in forming new startups that then get bought by Facebook or Google or Apple or, you know, or whomever. that get bought by the bigger companies. And but there is a huge difference between being able to develop a product that then gets bought long before you ever have to worry about monetization or actually making, you know, making it work. Or making an ecosystem that's viable, I should say. There's a huge difference between that and then going on and doing what Tony Fadell did at Nest, which was to create a great product, be very, very successful with it, continue to develop another product, clearly have, you know, like this idea for more, ship products, actually bring in revenue and be a successful company and then get bought. You know, Tony Fadell is the standout success. A former Apple employees.
He is.
You know, it's too bad he's sold to Google, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that part is disappointing. But it totally fits with the pattern that you described. The successful people leave, they do a startup, and it gets bought by Apple or Google.
Yeah, or Facebook.
Or Facebook, whoever. Or whoever, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, I don't know. But maybe, you know, maybe as Apple University continues to be more of a thing, and as Apple continues to institutionalize its design process and its design philosophy, as opposed to that design philosophy being ruthlessly hammered down from above by, you know, a single individual with a, you know, enormous vision and an unwavering ability to pursue that vision. Right. You know, so maybe as it does become more institutionalized, maybe you're right. Maybe we will see more and other companies out there who can approach things the Apple way.
Now, wouldn't that be interesting if Steve Jobs' biggest legacy turned out to be that he very quietly changed the philosophy of all the companies out there?
Oh, wouldn't that be, man, God, wouldn't that be a great world to live in?
That'd
like
be
lots
awesome.
Of companies were producing things in the Apple way.
I
Man,
would love
be
that.
Fantastic. Oh yeah. Oh, let's hope.
All right, my fingers are crossed.
Let's hope. Let us hope. Yeah, interesting stuff. All right, so let's dive into one more topic.
Okay.
And that one more topic is micropayments and the world of online transactions.
Yeah, you know, when we first started talking about this
before the show,
I was, you actually had to give me a hard sell.
I did, and apparently it was successful, because what is jump starting this conversation is a Bitcoin tipping service, but that's the jumping off point,
right? And initially I was like, oh, another company that's just trying to capitalize on Bitcoin,
right?
But it turns out that's not the case. I mean, to a degree, sure, but that's not the case. This is about changing how we view paying for certain types of things on a fundamental level.
Eventually.
Right.
Eventually it is. So the very short version, what sparked this conversation is a company called ChangeTip. And ChangeTip is, it's a tipping service that started off with Reddit and GitHub and Twitter. And this week they announced that they were broadening their service to Google Plus, YouTube, and Tumblr. And what I mean by a tipping service is that it allows, like in the case of Reddit or YouTube or Tumblr, that when you post a comment, if you put a certain string that's pretty simple, you can actually send send someone a very tiny amount of money. And the tiny amount of money here is what is important.
Hence micropayments,
right? And like with Twitter, for instance, and they've been doing this for a while, but like I could send you, you know, if I just send you a, if I have a ChangeTip account and I send you a tweet and I say, hey, Jeff Gamet, you know, have a nickel or have a beer or have 8,621 Satoshis. Their service recognizes what I did and then actually sends you another tweet saying, hey, Brian just sent you some Bitcoins. You know, here's the link to come and get it. And that's what's meant by a tipping service. So you can do the same thing, you know, like you're watching like just a really cool video, a band you love.
Mm-hmm.
Band you love posts a video on YouTube. And you want to support that band. And so, you know, you can write a comment with a very simple phrase, very simple code string of words, and then send that account holder a tip. And the same thing, you know, on Google Plus, same thing on Tumblr, same thing on GitHub, which is a developer resource. And this is all really cool. And so, you know, and this sort of thing started off on Reddit in the first place, where there was a Bitcoin tip bot, and where today there's a Dogecoin bot that allows Reddit members to send each other tips. And that's sort of where the springboard for all of this came from. But their bigger picture is micropayments. The ability to pay for anything with small amounts of money. And that's the important topic here.
And that's where you had me hooked, because it totally changed or has the potential to change how we look at paying for things online, especially like content.
Yeah, like what we do.
Yeah, yes, like what we do.
Right? What we do right now is paid for by advertising. Without advertisers. So there's three things that make our jobs possible. One, we do the job.
Yes.
Two, someone is interested in the job that we're doing, i.e. our readers and our listeners. The people listening to this very show right now.
That would be you.
That would be you. And then the advertisers who actually give us money for access to you, assuming that you're not blocking ads.
Right.
Yeah. You know, when you're blocking ads, you're just stealing the content. And we talked about that. I can go on a.
You could probably go on a rant that goes far beyond the time we have left in the show today.
Yes, I could. So we won't do that. And those three things, advertisers, the customer, which is you, the consumer, the reader, the listener, and then us being willing to do the job. When those three things come together, we can do that job. And that's because I guess part of it is because that is the way media has been paid for many, many decades.
Right.
Advertising. You know, it's been a long time since the subscription you paid for a magazine or a newspaper, for those old enough to remember those days, was actually enough to pay for the production of that newspaper or magazine. That's, I mean, like probably before even you and I were born.
Yes.
And
so a really long time ago.
And today it is what pays for websites. We have advertisers who value our readers and our listeners enough that they're willing to give us money to have access to you.
And what I saw at this right away was, well, what if someone goes to our site and there's a tip that Melissa has written that is really, really helpful for them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do they show that extra appreciation? Well, they could go back into the article over and over to try and hopefully drive up ad clicks or something. But
they can. Well, anyone who values a publication should pay attention to the sponsors. If you are on a site that has produced something that is good enough to interest you, you should look at that page and see who's advertising. And if one of those advertisements interests you, you should click on it and check out that sponsor. I'm crazy, I know, but this is something that I do. When I see a page that I really like, or, you know, any kind of service that I really like, I check out the sponsors because they're the ones that are paying for it.
But what if you could just throw a payment at that article?
Yeah.
Because, what if hey, you could... I really like that. Have a beer.
And the reality is, that any. If everybody that visited the Mac Observer gave us a penny or a couple of pennies for every article they read, we would be recording this from the back of our Bentleys.
They'd be really nice.
I don't know why we would do that. I don't know why we'd start recording the show in Bentleys, but we could if we wanted.
But the people that own those Bentleys, they're probably really nice people, and they wouldn't mind.
Anyway.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So the reality is that with traditional banking and traditional credit cards, you can't send someone a couple of pennies. It doesn't really work that way.
No. Yeah, it's cost prohibitive, and
it's cost prohibitive. It costs. More. So my guess is that Amazon does the most credit card transactions of any company on the planet. That's my guess. And my guess, knowing how fantastic they are at negotiating terms, my guess is that they pay the lowest rates of any retailer on the planet for credit card transactions. And they're still probably paying a nickel a transaction. I don't know that for a fact. And for some transactions they may be paying more, but I bet you they're paying at least a nickel a transaction. So the idea of sending someone two pennies and then the credit card fees that go along with making that happen being
you would lose money as the recipient.
Yeah, everyone loses money. It doesn't work that way. And the reality is that most places are paying 30 cents to a buck. Per credit card transaction. That's why when you go into like a mom and pop shop, some of them will have like, you know, minimum of $5, a minimum of $10 to do a credit card transaction. Like I've seen donut shops do that. And yes, I've eaten in a lot of donut shops where, you know, a lot of times the transaction at a donut shop might be for a buck and they don't want to do it through a credit card because the credit card fees are going to eat that dollar up.
So what if there's a system where people could make payments that fall below those thresholds and no one loses money?
Yeah. And what if – and so now the change tip is not that. Bitcoins actually allow for this concept. With Bitcoins, you can send someone a fraction of a penny or a few pennies. And you can actually do that and the system allows it. And the fees allow it, and so that is one promise of Bitcoin. But of course, it's by no means a perfect system. But being able to send small amounts of money to anywhere in the world are one thing that Bitcoin does way better than credit card companies and banks can do today.
Yes, and while we used Mac Observer as an example for all this. What I'm seeing is the potential for a system that works across the internet, and affords people a new way to make payments, and to offer tips or show appreciation, whatever.
Yeah,
outside of the regular credit card system.
So ChangeTip is the name of the company is actually ChangeCoin. ChangeTip is merely one of the first service, and that's how they're starting. This off, they're looking at at you know, someone who's choosing to send a great poster or a great content provider, a great video maker, a great Tumblr maker, a tip, a little, you know, an appreciation. But I talked to their CEO, and he definitely has he's got the bigger goal of micropayments as his larger sites. And, you know, from tips, we could go to a micropayment subscription system, or, you know, so that, you know, like my question for our listeners is this: if you could go to a site and pay by the page view, a half a penny, 2 pennies, and not have any advertising, would you do that? And I'll ask, would you do that, Jeff?
Sure. It's, yeah, because
if it was automatic.
Yeah, because at that point, I'm now paying for only the content that I am interested in.
Yeah, and if it's such a small amount of money that you're not, well, oh, I don't want to load up another page, that's going to cost me a half a penny. You know, you definitely has to be small amounts. But now imagine a world where instead of advertising being everywhere, and again, thank you to the advertisers who make our job possible. I'm not denigrating advertisers, but advertising as a whole is problematic for a lot of people. You know, imagine a world years in the future where every page that you go to, you just automatically get charged a half a penny.
Now, while I'm okay with this, I have a feeling that it's going to take many years to get a lot of other people okay with the idea of paying for content like that, because we have been trained through, for good or ill, that internet content is free.
Right. And it's not free. It's never been free. It's always been paid for by advertising. And, you know, and certainly there are some places that have subscriptions where you can pay for stuff directly. We've had subscription systems in the past at the Mac Observer. But, you know, it's being able to actually move this to the world of doing tiny transactions as a matter of course is a really interesting world to me. And you know, being able to directly support the people who are making stuff that I want to consume, that's super. It's interesting, and it's you know, it kind of plays into that thing that I, you know, rather than having someone, I'd like to be able to pay for the stuff that I use, rather than having them try to make money off me indirectly by, you know, parting me out and selling me to the world.
Sure. And I think there are a lot of people that share the same philosophy, and look at a lot of software titles that are out there where people want to pay because they're afraid if they don't, that the app or the service the app provides will go away.
Right. Now, in the meanwhile, I want to emphasize this again. If there is a site that you like, if there's a site that you just visit once and they're doing something that interests you, because we don't have micropayments, check out their sponsors. Just check out their sponsors. I'm not saying to do anything artificial. I don't want you just clicking on stuff blindly, because that's not going to do anyone any good either. But, you know, look and see if the advertising on a particular page actually has something that's interesting to you. And if it is, check it out. Click on it and check it out.
Yeah, that seems like a fair thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's our show, man.
I think it is too. Okay, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Instagram. I am Jay Gamut there.
And I'm Geek Tells.
You're Geek Tells.
G E G-E-E-K, oh boy, spelling this is kind of a pain in the butt. G-E-E-K-T-E-L-L-S, Geektels, on Instagram, where you can see pictures apparently of a cat.
I love that you have all these cat photos and you don't actually have a cat yourself.
I don't even own a cat. It's so funny.
I have a cat, and I think overall you actually have more cat photos than I do.
By orders of magnitude, and I've posted far fewer photographs. In the meanwhile, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.